This is the extraordinary PowerBook computer. This is an ordinary notebook computer. The extraordinary PowerBook. The ordinary notebook. Extraordinary. Ordinary. Today, we're pleased to announce that you can pick up the extraordinary PowerBook for a very ordinary price.
Hello, and welcome to the Goldcast Best 30-plus minute app conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, Apple Store break rooms everywhere feature his picture with a caption that says, "Do not sell Apple Care Plus to this man." Buster Heine is here.
Hello.
How's it going, Buster?
So good.
Good. That's all I like to hear. Also joining us, his duties include managing the day-to-day operations at Culta Mac and covering Leander Caney with a small blanket when he falls asleep at his desk. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey, it's really great to be here.
You've been on before, right? This is the second or third time we've had you on?
Yeah, every now and then Leander gets sick.
Or we know what really happened. Just a few too many of those morning ales. He's like, I'm not feeling so good.
I don't think he's drinking enough. He's been on the wagon for weeks. It's crazy.
That's probably what the real problem is his body is rejecting the fact that he's not giving it the alcohol that it demands.
It's a cry for help.
It's a reverse hangover. So people get sick after they drink. Leander's body makes him sick when he doesn't drink in protest. So he's taking a day off today, and hopefully he's snuggling with his blankie, and he'll be back sometime next week. We have got so much shart to talk about. Is that a word? I think I just coined that word.
Oh, that's a word.
Is it? Oh, yeah, it is. Unfortunately, that is. Yeah, I don't know.
Please, we don't have any shart today.
I don't know why my brain selected that word to describe the topics that we'll be reviewing this week. But, you know, maybe it'll be accurate. For those of you joining us for the first time, the Cultcast covers each week's best Apple stories. This week, we'll be talking about Steve Jobs for just a few minutes. The anniversary of Steve Jobs' death is October 5th, next Wednesday, if you didn't know that. And actually, you'll want to stay tuned for the commencement address that he gave in 2005. I play this. I've been doing this for, I think, 2 years now. This will be the third year. I have permission from Stanford to play this address that Steve Jobs gave in 2005. And it is like a culmination of all the experiences Steve Jobs had in his entire life, distilled into a 15-minute talk that he gave to these graduates of Stanford, and it's full of passion, and it really is inspiring, I think. And so I hope that you'll stay tuned and listen to that. We're going to be talking about the long-awaited MacBook Pro, I think the updates that we're all waiting for and longing for right around the corner. We'll tell you why the iPhone 7 Plus in jet black is pretty much impossible to find. And there's a new gadget coming to the market that I wanted to discuss later this episode that I'm super excited about. And Buster, I think you might be too. So
I think stoked.
Are you really? Okay, good.
Oh, seriously, yeah.
Are you really? Okay, good. I can tell. I was like, he doesn't care. So we'll be talking about that at the end of the episode. I want to thank Withings for supporting this episode, brought to you by the Body Cardio Scale, which assesses your overall cardiovascular health with heart rate and pulse wave velocity, which is a medically accepted measurement that tracks the speed at which heartbeat-generated waves move along your arteries. So it's a measure of heart health. It also checks your weight, your BMI, your total body fat, water percentage, plus muscle and bone mass. Features a solid aluminum base with a heat-tempered glass, and it's super-duper accurate. I actually have a previous version of this scale, and no joke, it is one of the best gadgets that I have ever reviewed. It's great because it tracks your weight and syncs it in the cloud and makes it available to you in an app and shows you all sorts of interesting information about your body, and you can track your weight over time. And I still, to this day, I've had it for like 2-3 years. I still, to this day, use it because it's so handy. And this is an updated version of that scale. It's available at stores everywhere, including Withings.com and on Amazon. That is the Body Cardio Scale from Withings. Highly recommend you check it out if you're looking for a great smart scale. Alrighty. Well, as I mentioned, October 5th is the anniversary of Steve Jobs' death. How long has it been now? Does anyone know? I think this is the fifth year anniversary.
Well, that's an embarrassing thing to not have right at our fingertips.
I think it's 6 years. Can you Google it real fast while I just vamp here, Lewis? So I thought it would be kind of cool to take a moment to remember Steve Jobs. And the question I would ask to you guys is, what is that one thing that really made him special? And I'll go first. I think that it was his unrelenting passion for excellence. And that seems to have driven him in every aspect of everything that he did. And funny enough, I think that not only was it his biggest strength, but it was also his biggest weakness, because he only cared about excellence, it seems, many times. And that would mean that if you didn't provide the excellence that he was looking for, he would berate you, he would insult you, he would fire you, maybe all three of those things. He would yell at you. And yet, even though many people probably would consider him a pretty big a-hole for doing a lot of those things, it was effective, you know? I mean, what can you say? I mean, the guy got more results out of the people that he worked with than virtually anyone else. And so that made him a complex man, because he would love you 1 minute and be screaming at you the next. But, I mean, damn, dude, doesn't it make him respectable? I think it does.
Perfectionism.
Lewis, did you have anything to add?
Well, you know, I mean, perfectionism, what? It's a trait that's fantastic and horrible, right? It can make you do horrible things and hate people for being unable to do things in a perfect way. But you want me to talk about that, or you want me to say, what do I think made him special?
What do you think?
Well,
you were saying just before the show, you were saying...
Yeah, and this kind of goes on to the perfectionism. I mean, he had the ability to make people believe they needed anything. And part of that, I think, the more I think about this, is one of the coolest things is the way that they turn these product launches into these big events. I mean, you think about how sad it could have been to be... If you've been to some of these other product, you go in and it's like three guys in a room and it's really everything's sad. He turned these things into rock concerts almost. And he's like a wizard showman in that way, and to explain these kind of complicated gadgets in this very simple way and make you go, oh wow, I got to get one of those as soon as possible. That's what I think was great about him, his ability to be a showman who could deliver the message and convince you that you absolutely had to get the latest whatever he was selling.
That's true. He was like the Johnny Carson of CEOs. And the product presentations that you see now, you see them all the time, where these people have all this pomp and circumstance and they make them into like these showy spectacles where they're unveiling these products. Like, people didn't really do that when Steve Jobs was starting in the game.
Yeah.
Right? He changed the game in that way. And you can see how people these days emulate him, and how companies, in some ways, just flat out copy what he, like the format that he really pushed. Yeah, try to. I haven't really seen anyone really do it. I take that back. I think Elon Musk at Tesla, probably.
He's quite a showman too.
Oh, he's horrible.
Well, he is one of the most.
I haven't watched any of these announcements, but
you haven't?
No,
dude, the SpaceX one this week. I mean, the stuff he was presenting was cool, but God, he was so annoying to watch on stage. He just had like his train of thought is broken with every four words. It seems like
it's, you know, it's funny. I totally agree with a lot of what you just said. Like, Tesla will have these amazing keynotes, like the one for the Model 3. And it's super exciting. The whole room is thrilled. And then Elon Musk kind of sheepishly comes out. He's like, hello, I'm Elon Musk. Today I'll be showing you the Model 3. Hope you like it. And he just keeps that tone the entire presentation. And yet, people are extremely engaged with the presentation. I think that's because, like Apple, Tesla's products speak so... They say it all, right? They're such great products that he doesn't need to be amazing on stage, because his products are thrilling and exciting. And so he can come out there and just, you know, be really sheepish for an hour. And everyone thinks that he's a lot more entertaining than he probably was. But Tesla has like those showy keynotes as well. So
Google does them now. Everybody does them now.
Yeah, but Googles are not entertaining, are they?
No,
they're
but
really
I mean,
not.
They're attempting the same thing, right?
Yeah, they are.
And I mean, I don't know. I just remember a long time ago when product releases were nothing like that.
And I think that they're still not for the most part. I mean, only a very small selection of products are appropriate for like that showy release, right? No one gets excited about Google's newest cloud products. You know, right? I mean,
sure.
or even a lot of their hardware just isn't that exciting, like the Chromecast or something. Like most people just don't care about products like that. But products like electric cars, like the Tesla 3, like the iPhone, like these are products that are exciting because they're accessible to everyone. Everyone's probably going to own one of these products one day or know someone that will. So,
I was going to say Mars rockets, but probably not everyone's going to own one of those.
Well, I don't know. If it's up to Elon Musk, we probably all
everyone will.
Yeah. I want one.
Yeah. I mean, I, for one, will be filling out my application for the Mars colony. I'm done with this place. I'll be doing the Mars cast.
I was going to say,
yeah.
How do you think the data connection will be up there?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be so great. It's going to have to be so great. We're going to have to run like a super long Ethernet cable from Earth all the way to all the way to Mars so we can broadcast. And I'll be talking about the cool life forms that I'm discovering on Mars and the colonization practices that are going on with me and all the ladies, you know, just like stuff like that. All right. Well, stay tuned, as I mentioned, for the Steve Jobs commencement address that he gave at Stanford in 2005. That's at the end of the show. It's great. It's great. And I hope that you'll stick around to listen to it. Let's talk about MacBook Pros, Buster.
Oh, dude, did that rumor just give you a chubby?
Swing.
As soon as I was writing it, I was like, oh my gosh, Airfan's going to have an orgasm when he reads this.
I don't know if this is TMI, but I had six. Yeah, oh my gosh. I'm so excited for new MacBook Pros. New Macs in general, actually. So let me just run through this real fast. For people that have been waiting for new Macs and you feel like it's been a long time, it has been a long time. It's not just you. It's been forever since Apple has really released new Macs. So the iMac is usually refreshed on average every 317 days. It's been 352. The MacBook Pro, usually refreshed every 268 days. It's been 500 days. MacBook Air, it's been 570 days. The average is 350. The Mac Mini. Did you know the Mac Mini was still around? I saw a guy at the Apple store buying a Mac Mini this week, and I almost slapped him because he's absolutely throwing his money away at this point. I mean, that was released, and it was last updated October 2014. 2014!
Wow.
It's been 714 days. The average is 438. And Mac Pros, the most egregious offender. Average update is 449 days. It's now been 1,015 days since the last updates. I mean, these things are using hardware that is 2-3 years old in some cases. So I think that we may be in for a big Mac event because Apple really needs to update everything at this point, except for the MacBooks. Those were updated fairly recently. And so there was a report from Mac Rumors, right, Buster, this week?
Yes.
That said, so why are they expecting it? They said, I think, mid-October or something.
Right. They were saying that Apple's just trying to finish up macOS 10.12.1, whatever it is.
I'm trying to say that three times.
And so once they get that one, has, I guess, the touch bar features and stuff like that that they're working to, I guess, fine tune. And that once they're done, they'll be able to install it on whatever's coming out of the production lines and announce the new product.
So I was reading that Mac Rumors report, and they said that Apple is basically trying to polish up this last software update because it's going to support a lot of the new hardware features that we mentioned in patch shows and that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And so once that's done, I think that we're going to get an Apple event. And the question will be, are we getting major updates across the board, or are we just going to get major updates for the MacBook Pro? Because I just read you those averages. and how long it has been since all the different products have been updated. And these things are getting super old.
Well, we've been talking about there's already a Retina 5K Mac, right? iMac,
yeah.
So I guess that could get like a little hardware bump. But I think the MacBook Pro would probably be the only thing that gets like a redesign, really. Maybe the Mac Mini too, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the Mac Mini. The MacBook Pro, probably not, because I think the design is still somewhat fresh.
What do you mean?
Well,
it's got the new bar.
The Mac Pro. The Mac Pro.
Okay.
The Mac Pro, the trash can. That design, I think, is still pretty cool and still fresh. They just need to update the internals, which is really baffling because...
It's their pro product, and it never gets updated.
And if you only have to update the internals, that's not like redesigning the entire machine. It would seem as though it would be easy to just update that, you know, every year or every 2 years max. 2 years max for a pro machine like that. Yeah. But
it's puzzling.
What's that?
It's puzzling.
It's puzzling. I agree with you. So we may see some major Mac updates coming in October. I went out on a limb. I put my reputation on the line. As many of you know who listened last episode, and I think I predicted that we're going to see a Apple event on October 11th. I am not getting this information from any sources. No one else seems to think this is going to happen. I have literally pulled this out of my buttocks, and I think it's going to happen October 11th. I have used my crystal ball, which has confirmed that I will probably be right. My magic 8-ball also says odds are in your favor. So it's looking like October 11th. If not October 11th, possibly October 18th. But keep your ducats saved because the updates are approaching us rapidly. Oh, we should at least mention, so besides the OLED bar on the MacBook Pro, we're expecting Touch ID, right, Buster? Mm-hmm. Polaris graphic chips from AMD, which are supposedly going to smoke the graphics. They're the GPUs that are currently in the machines, which wouldn't be hard to do because they're old and were never that great to begin with. And is there anything else major? USB-C. Oh, USB-C replacing all other ports, including the MagSafe, including Thunderbolts.
MagSafe.
Yeah.
I love the MagSafe.
We love MagSafe, and I would hate to see that go. And the SD card reader that's supposed to be going. I mean, according to those prototypes that Cultimac got their hands on, it seems like you're going to get possibly just some USB-C ports, and then possibly an audio jack. Leander was talking about this last show about that hole cut out in the side. But as far as ports go, Buster, is there anything else?
God, it needs a lightning port for my headphones, or they better include a dongle that goes 3.5 millimeter to lightning.
You know you're getting a dongle. I would be shocked if they put a lightning port on the new MacBook Pro,
but
because the only reason they would need it was for the headphones.
Well, also, you could use the lightning accessories like the SD card reader on your MacBook. If they kill the MacBook, then you could, because that's what I have for my iPad. So that would actually be kind of nice, I think.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this last show. I'm really curious to see what Apple does here, right? Because everyone uses their EarPods on their Mac. And if you can't do that, that sucks. That really sucks. What are you going to use on your Mac, right? You're going to have to buy a whole new pair of headphones or something? Or how are you going to use headphones on your Mac? Because Macs aren't iPhones, right? A lot of people need to use headphones in production, video production, audio production. Like, how the hell am I going to edit the podcast, right? Am I going to have to get Bluetooth headphones to do that? So there's a lot of questions surrounding that one issue. It seems like a small issue, but I think it's going to be a big deal.
Have there been any rumors about that, a lightning port on the Mac, though? I mean, I don't think so. I haven't seen anything about that. I haven't seen anything about an actual date for this thing. I don't know. It seems like we've been waiting for this forever.
Oh, like since the beginning of the year, it seems like.
It's been 500 days. I can tell you exactly. It's been 500 days.
We should put a ticker on the website.
So I think they might do a Lightning to USB-C adapter. That makes the most sense to me. And Apple loves dongles. We all know that. There's a dongle for every hole. Now,
I think
we just found our episode title. Yeah.
A dongle for every
There's
hole.
A dongle for every hole now. It's like you need dongles to do anything and everything. So I think that's going to be what we end up getting. Let's talk about the jet black iPhone 7, Buster. This thing, Leander Caney has one of these. Mm-hmm. He has the mythical 256 gigabyte model, which I didn't even think existed. I thought it was just a rumor. And I am not seeing any jet blacks anywhere. None of the Apple stores have them still.
Do you ever check iStockNow.com?
I check iStockNow.com like four times a day, bro. Four times a day. Because my black iPhone 7 Plus, matte black, was supposed to ship in 2 or 3 weeks, and it's already been almost 2 weeks, I think, and it's still not shipping. And now it's telling me October 19th. So I've been checking it every day, trying to get my hands on one. I almost locked one down today. In fact, I'm glad that you brought this up. For those of you that are waiting for an iPhone, iStockNow.com will show you the Apple stores in your area, and it will show you what they have in stock. So it is the best way that I have found to find out what's in store at your local Apple store. And if they have it, you can lock it down. You can reserve it and just go pick it up in store. So there's a hot tip for you. But you got to act fast on those iPhone 7 Pluses, because as soon as they come into stock, like I saw one this morning, AT&T, 128 gigabyte black, and I was like fumbling for my phone to try to reserve it. And by the time I got through the process on the Apple app, it was gone. Anyway, Buster, jet black iPhones. We may not see these for a while.
Dude, yeah, and I'm just waiting until I can walk into a store and buy one, so I guess
that could
won't.
Be months from now. Like, yeah. You might be looking at December.
I might as well just hold out for the iPhone 7S.
For the iPhone. You know? or the iPhone 8, right.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, this is a big problem. So the jet blacks are impossible to find, and a lot of people are trying to get this specific model, right, because it's the new hotness. Mm-hmm. But according to Ming-Chi Kuo, one of the most accurate Apple analysts in all the lands, in all Middle Earth, he said that Apple's having trouble with production of the black cases, aren't they?
Yeah, so which makes sense because it's a new process. So I think they said like 60 to 70% meet the quality standards. So there's, you know, nearly half of them don't meet Apple's quality.
I wonder what they're
quality.
Doing with all those ones that don't meet.
Oh, just tossing them.
They just toss them.
Or maybe like building a house out of them, a jet black house.
So distressed models.
I don't know. They should. Like, I would, like, I don't really care if it looks perfect personally. So.
You're the only one, Buster. You're the only one that doesn't care.
Dude, toss it in the TJ Maxx discount bin and I'll get it.
There you go. They should have like a bent and dent area on Apple's website.
Lightly used.
Yeah.
Like when I get my new phone, I pull out my monocle and I inspect every inch of that thing. If there's like even
dead pixel,
if there is one dead pixel, if there's one tiny speck of imperfection, I immediately become enraged and I take it back to the Apple store. That actually, I'm embarrassed to say, I actually did do that once. I got an iPad and the bezel there was just like a tiny nick taking out of the bezel. It was almost unnoticeable. And I really thought about it intensely for like a week or two. I went back and forth on it. I'm like, do I want to be that guy, right, that takes his iPad in there because there's one little speck of damage? And ultimately, I did, because I had spent $600 or $700 on this iPad, and you know, dude, it needs to be new when you get it. It needs to be brand new.
Sure.
I think. You guys with me there?
I'm with you on that.
Buster doesn't care.
I don't care. No.
Buster,
I mean,
put that much damage on it in the first weekend.
Anyway. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, it's not going to be good in my hands. So
I try to keep mine flawless so I can sell it. And, you know, when you sell it, eventually someone's like, oh, there's a speck in it. I want a $500 discount. I don't want to deal with those people. So you may not be able to find a jet black iPhone 7 Plus anytime soon. And as Buster said, at a certain point, I kind of wonder if people are just going to be like, just screw this. I'm just going to wait for the next iPhone. Because if you're going to make me wait until December, because right now the shipping dates are November. If you're going to make me wait even longer because you can't make them fast enough, well, then at a certain point, it just makes more sense just to wait, because you're not going to have that much time before it's outdated. But I guess a lot of people keep their phone for 2 years, so maybe that doesn't matter to them. But before we continue, let me give a quick thanks to Dollar Shave Club for supporting this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, you don't need to choose between price and quality to get an amazing and affordable shave. Dollar Shave Club is the answer. And to prove how amazing their shave is, right now, they are going to give you your first month free at dollarshaveclub.com/cultcast. Dollar Shave Club has an excellent sharp razor. They deliver right to your door for a third of the price of what you'll normally pay in drugstores. Even on Amazon, they have some of the lowest prices available. They cut out all the middlemen, and you get to save the difference. It's a great business model, and if I could, I would recommend that you check out Dollar Shave Club, see their offerings. You can check out the Executive Blade, which is one of their most popular blades. And if you use it with Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, the blade will just glide gently over your skin, over no matter what part of your body you're shaving. You'll just get a smooth, gentle glide. And I know you like that. With Dollar Shave Club, you can look, smell, and shave like $1 million. Dollar Shave Club is so confident in the quality of all their products, you can get your first month free. And that is the way to do it, because you can try the shave for yourself. Everyone's body, everyone's face is different. DollarShaveClub.com/cultcast. Alrighty, I wanted to ask you guys about this. I saw this thread on Reddit, and it annoyed me greatly. And I want to hear your take on it. So, there was a guy who was using his iPhone 7 Plus in the shower because the iPhone 7 Plus is IP67 certified, which means it's water resistant, dust resistant, and it was one of the marquee features that Apple advertised during the keynotes. And if you go to the iPhone 7 section of Apple's website, it's one of the big marquee features that they advertised there. So this guy decided to use his iPhone 7 in the shower, and the haptic feedback engine stopped working after the first time that he did this. And he was trying to figure out what he could do, and he was commiserating on Reddit, and people were chastising him for quote-unquote testing the water resistance of the iPhone 7 Plus by taking it in the shower in the first place, admonishing him for even trying such a thing. And I was getting pissed on his behalf because Apple has broadcast this as a water-resistant phone. I mean, wouldn't you guys use this, I don't know, Buster, in a canoe, in a kayak, in the shower?
Oh, I'm planning to take it... Yeah, some spots Apple didn't think of, that's for sure.
And I know you are.
Yeah.
And it better hold up because it's supposed to be water resistant. Am I being too anal about the fact that this thing broke so quickly? Doesn't he deserve to get his phone replaced? Shouldn't you expect that the phone is not going to get busted if it gets a little bit of water on it or gets splashed or falls in the water or what have you? Buster, what do you think?
I believe the user agreement or whatever Apple has, it does not cover water damage. So even though it is water resistant, the warranty does not cover water damage.
Isn't that bull crap, though? I wonder what Apple would do if you took it in and you said, hey, my phone is water damaged. And they're like, sorry, it's not covered. And you're like, you told me it was water resistant and it got splashed with water and now it doesn't work.
Well, I don't think there's been a ton of tests. Like we posted the surfer chick surfing with hers, iFixit, they dunked theirs in a tube and it lasted 4 hours. But you're not really supposed to do that. Apple never says it's waterproof. It says it's water resistant. And so I do think that's a big difference. And so how are they going to be able to tell did it just get splashed? Or was this idiot swimming with it for 3 hours,
and, right?
You know,
yeah.
So I think that's why they can't say that they will cover all water damage.
I feel like if they didn't expect people to use it in the water, and it's more like a precautionary feature, as you just said. So if it falls in the water, it should not break. Maybe.
Right.
Then they shouldn't have advertised it in the first place.
Well, they never do advertise it with you going swimming. They just, I think the only water resistant type stuff they show is somebody using it in the rain and stuff like that. They never show it submerged underwater and still working.
Well, this guy didn't submerge it, though. I don't think he took a bubble bath with it.
hot, steamy water? I don't know. That could
okay. get I'm with you there.
Into your
Maybe
stuff.
Hot, steam
hot steamy water is probably not good. Why do you got to have it in the shower? Why not just have it on the side, like on the sink? I don't
Buy
know.
Buy a UE like, boom. They're waterproof.
Yeah. Like, it just seems like a dumb idea to be showering with your phone in the first place.
Well, I didn't read this Reddit thread, but did the guy try taking it back, or is it how far did this go? Is it just like,
he hadn't tried yet. I think he was asking people if he should even try, and everyone was like, no, it's your fault. Like, you just need to eat the cost.
I bet they take
it
back.
And I was like, don't even listen to these fools. You need to take that thing in there.
Yeah.
And you need to make your case to the manager and just be like, on your page, on your Apple.com iPhone 7 page, it says water resistance.
He doesn't even need to say that.
I would just take it in my haptic engine stopped working.
Because okay,
that's the only thing
phone.
That's not working,
we don't have
right?
anymore.
Yeah.
That's the only problem.
We'll replace this for you in 6 months.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a jet black phone? No problem, sir. We'll replace this for you. You're going to go on the waiting list. Come back in October of 2019. I mean, I probably would too. I'd probably just take it in there. But you know, they have water damage sensors in there, and
they do.
And one of the things they always ask you is, well, did you expose your phone to water? And if you say no, and then it has water damage on the little water damage pads, they're gonna give you that look like, dude, you lying sack of, you know,
okay.
like.
So, but there's a hack that you can use. And I may or not have done this once, but you can open up your phone and take a little bleach and a cotton swab and like put some bleach on a cotton swab and then put
kidding.
Bleach on the sensors and it turns them from red back to white.
You are
what?
Kidding. Does
I'm
that
serious.
Actually work?
Yeah, it works.
Wow. Learn something every day.
I cannot believe that.
Yeah.
This is all hearsay, of course. Buster
yeah,
read about
I would
this.
Never condone doing that, of course.
Colton Mack would certainly never recommend that.
Yeah, there will certainly not be a editorial how-to on how to definitely never do this to your phone, but we know that people out there are doing it. Wow, I cannot believe that would work.
Yeah, a reader or somebody on Twitter told me about it one time when I had a water-damaged iPhone.
And you tried it out, and it actually worked?
Yeah.
And you
like,
returned
this?
Well, so I had a friend that worked at the Apple store, and he saw my tweet that it was water damaged, so he told the stupid repair girl that it was water damaged, so I was really mad at him because he ruined my whole thing. But
what,
if
he
had
ratted
not,
you out?
He ratted me out.
Good
what a
God.
Jerk.
Jeez.
So, but it would have worked if he hadn't have told her.
I guess my point is Tim Cook at one point in an interview said, oh, I put on my Apple Watch, I shower with it, y'all, because it's waterproof. Well, the iPhone and the Apple Watch have the same IP67 water certification. So
you're still calling it waterproof and not water resistant.
Because
Apple would never say it's waterproof. Because
okay,
waterproof
sorry,
means
I just
like
call it, the
it
IP
definitely
certification.
Never get like busted from water.
So
that's
both
why they
IP67 rated, which means they're resistant to a certain intensity spray of water and submersion for up to 30 minutes in 3 or 1 meter of water.
Yeah.
So really, you should be able to use your iPhone in the shower just like you use your Apple Watch. And I've been using my Apple Watch in the shower for a year, and I don't have any problems with it. So, and I mean, Tim Cook does the same thing. He said that.
Okay.
So I just think it's kind of bull crap that this guy may take his iPhone in and they may not repair it. And maybe, like you guys said, he'll take it in and they'll repair it just fine. But as a marquee feature, I just think it's kind of weird that Apple's like, hey, it's water resistance, but if it gets water damage, we're not going to repair that crap. Hell no. That's on you.
Sorry.
So
don't
do it.
It
kind of makes you nervous to actually use that feature, I guess.
Yeah.
It would for me anyway, which is one of the main reasons why I'm getting the phone.
I can't think of any reason in the world why I'd ever take a phone into the shower in the first place.
Oh, you
never
practice
never,
your bass chords, no. You know? You're like,
I mean, I could take a speaker in there to listen to music or something, but the phone itself,
you got to keep up on your text.
FaceTime called one of your bros from the
you
shower
kidding
and be like,
me?
Hey, dude,
oh,
check out these bags.
Or do a steamy Snapchat, you know?
Yeah, steamy Snapchats are all the rage these days.
Learning a little bit too much about you guys here.
Sometimes I'll FaceTime Buster. I'm like, dude, look at this cool hairdo I washed into my chest. He's like,
chest
that's so
tubes.
Awesome, bro. And then I hang up, you know.
Heavens.
We do that once or twice a week. And then the other reason I would want to use it in the shower is I listen to a lot of podcasts, and oftentimes, you know, I will be doing stuff around the house and then I want to listen in the shower or something. And so I have to activate my Bluetooth radio, my waterproof Bluetooth radio, which is fine. It works. But it'd be so much more convenient to not have to buy a Bluetooth radio in the first place. Bluetooth speaker, I should say, a Bluetooth speaker. And then, you know, and then use that into the shower. If you could just take your iPhone into the shower, that's so convenient. That's one of the best features of the phone, in my opinion. Then if you can't actually do that safely, it's kind of like, well, what the hell's the purpose of this then? If it's waterproof or water resistant, sorry, Buster. Water resistant, but you can't take it in there and know that it's going to work. And if it breaks, Apple will fix it. It just kind of ruins the whole feature for me.
Seems all like, right, anyway. Seems like a real good way to drop a phone, too.
Well, I'm not like, I'm not using it in the bubble bath. usually not.
I remain unconvinced that that is a
an
in-demand feature. Oh, I really want my phone in my shower.
like Buster said, steamy Snapchats.
I guess it's possible. Kids these 40, days.
50% of what's happening on Snapchat these days is happening in the shower with steam.
Wow.
And soap. So, yeah, I get what the times. You should actually try that. Leander loves steamy Snapchats. Just take up some steamy photos, send them to Leander. He thinks they're hilarious.
I'm blocking all you guys.
So send some of those his way later today. He's sick. It's going to make him feel better. He'll be like, that Lewis Wallace, he's crazy.
Yeah.
He's sending me more steamy Snapchats.
Suddenly my key doesn't work at the office anymore. All kinds of...
okay. Let's wrap up with... some talk about drones, Buster.
Oh, dude. So much awesome droneness.
So much droneage happening. Yeah, and I have never purchased one, but I think this might be the first one I get.
Dude, yeah.
So there was a new product release this week called the DJI Mavic Pro drone. It's going to be landing in Apple stores in November. But I think it's available right now online on DJI's site.
You can pre-order it, yeah, and then it ships October 15th.
Okay. Man, you know who's making drones just seem like the coolest gadget ever is Casey Neistat.
Oh, I know, and he always gets like hooked up with all these, you know, early models and stuff.
Yeah.
And his video on the Mavic Pro, though, that sold me. Like, I was like, I don't know if I want that or the Karma drone from GoPro, but... Dude, that DJI drone looks so awesome because it's super tiny and it has a lot of smart features. It just looks like the perfect drone for anybody that's active.
So for those people that don't really know a whole lot about drones, there is a small line of consumer grade drones that are, you know, somewhat affordable. They're like, you know, between $1,000 and $2,000, and this one fits in that line. And the DJI Phantom Pro 4 or the Phantom 4 was their newest, you know, best, coolest offering in that price range. And then they just recently released the Mavic Pro, which, from what they've said, has all the features or most of the features of the Phantom 4, except it's less expensive. And as Buster said, it folds down into itself like a little transformer. Like, do you like that sound effect?
So good.
Until I watched a lot of Transformers.
Very pro.
Thank you. And... It makes it super compact so you can actually take it with you places. That's important because even the smaller drones like the Phantom 4 are fairly large.
Huge.
And are kind of hard to cart around. And if you don't cart it around with you, you never use it, right? And so this thing is so small, you can toss it in your backpack and then it just folds out and you have a 4K drone ready to fly around and you can control it with your iPhone or your iPad. And it can go up to, I think, 4.3 miles away. And the footage that came out of this thing, I'll link to Casey Neistat's video in the show notes. You can check it out if you want. The footage is gorgeous. You saw that video that I'm talking about, right, Buster?
Oh, yeah. And he's, you know, it's so easy to fly that he can control it while, you know, riding around town on his longboard. It's awesome.
Dude, that guy, seriously. Those longboards, too. I don't even know how to skateboard. But he makes me want one of those things too. I'd probably kill myself on it. But it'd be a great YouTube video.
Way
I'm just
gonna
be the next Casey Neistat. I'm gonna get a longboard. I'm gonna get a drone. I'm gonna start vlogging every day. So if you're not interested in drones, if you're not interested in drones yet, if you see this video, I think you will be, because it just looks so cool. Honestly, Buster, I don't even know what I would do with a drone like this. Like, what would you do with it? Oh, dude, you could have it, like, follow you around on hikes.
Yeah, I would take it on hikes, cliff jumping videos.
Oh, dude, that would take your video to a extreme level.
Oh, yeah. So dope.
It gets 30 minutes of, approximately 30 minutes of battery life per battery. And you can get the drone only for $750. There's a big package that includes more batteries and the remote and everything for $1,300. I think that might be the one I go for.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money, though.
For $1,300, what you consider like the GoPro Karma drone with the Hero 5 is, I think, $1,100. So it's not too bad. And that doesn't come with any extra batteries or anything like that either. So the extra batteries alone would be worth it. Plus, you got extra propellers and all the other things. I don't think it's that bad for, like, the full kit.
Yeah, the full kit, actually, I was looking at it, and usually I would probably not go for that one because I'm like, I don't need the backpack and all that extra crap, right? But it comes with a quick charger. It comes with a car charger, propellers, the extra bag, or I should say the bag that you'll probably never use because you'll just toss it in your backpack. So it actually comes with some useful crap. And yeah, again, I don't know what I would use it for, but it has a follow mode, so you can, like, you know, go on hikes or go on walks, and it will, like, actually follow you, and you create, like, some really cool cinematic video.
I think just for anything, you know, like any video you would want to record, because he was showing Casey Neistat flew it in at his house, and I tried to fly a drone in my house once, and it was the scariest thing ever. Like, me and the dog were, like, running for cover, like, what the hell did I do? Oh, my God.
It's like chasing you around the house.
Yeah, just, like, you know, crashing into stuff. But he did his, like, and it just pops up and just hovers, like,
and just
perfectly.
Exactly in the same place.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could just use it for just filming whatever, you know? Just pop it up and have it follow you around as you talk. It, you know, it really works as, like, a stabilizer in many ways, too, if you wanted it just for that.
Dude, drones are so cool.
Yeah.
Man, you know what I thought would be really fun to try? I don't know how Apple makes those cinematic Apple TV screensavers, you know, like the slow motion. Right. I think they use a drone for those. I think they record in 4K at a high frame rate and then they just slow them down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it creates like that really cool slow motion effect. Cause I was thinking it's either got to be a helicopter or it's got to be a drone. And some of the locations
for
they're
Apple's
flying
commercial?
Through, I'm like, there's no way it's a helicopter.
Oh, for a lot of commercial photography, drones have just become so huge. But now I think that the Mavic Pro, it makes it so you can take it anywhere. I think it will make drones, like, popular with consumers. Like, it just wasn't a big thing now because, like you were saying, it's super big. You had to be, like, an expert pilot to control it, and now it's just super easy.
Yeah, and the new one, in the Mavic Pro, you can swipe to land. So, like, once you get close to the ground, on your iPhone, it pops up a little swipe to land thing. So you just swipe it, and it just lands itself.
Mm-hmm.
It works with the lightning adapter on your iPhone. I mean, they've made it very iOS friendly. So in any case, looks super cool. One of the most exciting gadgets I've seen this year so far. I mean, aside from the Segway Mini Pro, this is probably like my second most hotly anticipated gadget. I think I'm going to get one, man. I'm going to get one.
Yeah, I was already thinking I'd get the GoPro Karma instead of buying a iPhone 7 immediately. And then once I saw that Mavic, I just totally switched up on
Maybe
it.
Maybe we can get review units. Wink,
oh,
wink.
Yeah. Dude, I've been trying to get GoPro and DJI review units for years, and they never even respond to my emails.
Yeah. they're like, we only send stuff to Bloomberg and The Verge.
Yeah.
Maybe they saw that video of the drone in your house.
Yeah, like,
I think
nah,
you should
this
post
guy's,
that in the show notes. I want to see.
He's going to end up in a lawsuit situation with us. Yeah, we need to see that video. Buster and his dog screaming and ducking and running around the house, diving behind stuff as the drone just flies around erratically, trying to cut them.
Bouncing off Max.
Alrighty, well, with that said, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the CoolCast we have for you guys this week. But of course, stay tuned for the Steve Jobs commencement address at Stanford. I think you're going to like it if you haven't heard it. And if you have, it's good to give it a listen every year. Get inspired. La.
Is that all the cult cast we have for you this week?
That is all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come say hi to us on Twitter, I'm at Arifon, Buster's BST3R. Lewis, are you on Twitter?
Of course, isn't everyone? Lewis Wallace. It's shockingly hard to remember.
No, David Pierini is not. We've been giving out his Cultimac email address.
He's got a post office box somewhere.
Yeah, he's got a P.O. box. We'll put the address in the show notes. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys and gals. Don't want to forget about the gals. Next time. We got a few gals listening. I hear from them on Twitter every once in a while.
Several.
Anytime you say something sexist.
Which is
every
which
show.
Is only like once or twice a month. But I hear from them.
Thank you. I'm honored to be with you today for your commencement from one of the finest universities in the world. Truth be told, I never graduated from college, and this is the closest I've ever gotten to a college graduation. Today, I want to tell you three stories from my life. That's it. No big deal. Just three stories. The first story is about connecting the dots. I dropped out of Reed College after the first 6 months, but then stayed around as a drop-in for another 18 months or so before I really quit. So why'd I drop out? It started before I was born. My biological mother was a young, unwed graduate student, and she decided to put me up for adoption. She felt very strongly that I should be adopted by college graduates, so everything was all set for me to be adopted at birth by a lawyer and his wife. Except that when I popped out, they decided at the last minute that they really wanted a girl. So my parents, who were on a waiting list, got a call in the middle of the night asking, "We've got an unexpected baby boy. Do you want him?" They said, "Of course." My biological mother found out later that my mother had never graduated from college and that my father had never graduated from high school. She refused to sign the final adoption papers. She only relented a few months later when my parents promised that I would go to college. This was the start in my life. And 17 years later, I did go to college. But I naively chose a college that was almost as expensive as Stanford. And all of my working class parents' savings were being spent on my college tuition. After 6 months, I couldn't see the value in it. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life and no idea how college was going to help me figure it out. And here I was spending all of the money my parents had saved their entire life. So I decided to drop out and trust that it would all work out okay. It was pretty scary at the time, but looking back, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. The minute I dropped out, I could stop taking the required classes that didn't interest me and begin dropping in on the ones that looked far more interesting. It wasn't all romantic. I didn't have a dorm room, so I slept on the floor in friends' rooms. I returned Coke bottles for the 5-cent deposits to buy food with. And I would walk the 7 miles across town every Sunday night to get one good meal a week at the Hare Krishna temple. I loved it. And much of what I stumbled into by following my curiosity and intuition turned out to be priceless later on. Let me give you one example. Reed College at that time offered perhaps the best calligraphy instruction in the country. Throughout the campus, every poster, every label on every drawer was beautifully hand calligraphed. Because I had dropped out and didn't have to take the normal classes, I decided to take a calligraphy class to learn how to do this. I learned about serif and sans serif typefaces, about varying the amount of space between different letter combinations, about what makes great typography great. It was beautiful, historical, artistically subtle in a way that science can't capture, and I found it fascinating. None of this had even a hope of any practical application in my life. But 10 years later, when we were designing the first Macintosh computer, it all came back to me. And we designed it all into the Mac. It was the first computer with beautiful typography. If I had never dropped in on that single course in college, the Mac would have never had multiple typefaces or proportionally spaced fonts. And since Windows just copied the Mac, it's likely that no personal computer would have them. If I had never dropped out, I would have never dropped in on that calligraphy class, and personal computers might not have the wonderful typography that they do. Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college, but it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart even when it leads you off the well-worn path, and that will make all the difference. My second story is about love and loss. I was lucky. I found what I loved to do early in life. Woz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I'd just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? Well, as Apple grew, we hired someone who I thought was very talented to run the company with me. And for the first year or so, things went well. But then our visions of the future began to diverge, and eventually we had a falling out. When we did, our board of directors sided with him. And so at 30, I was out, and very publicly out. What had been the focus of my entire adult life was gone, and it was devastating. I really didn't know what to do for a few months. I felt that I had let the previous generation of entrepreneurs down, that I had dropped the baton as it was being passed to me. I met with David Packard and Bob Noyce and tried to apologize for screwing up so badly. I was a very public failure, and I even thought about running away from the valley. But something slowly began to dawn on me. I still loved what I did. The turn of events at Apple had not changed that one bit. I'd been rejected, but I was still in love. And so I decided to start over. I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again, less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life. During the next 5 years, I started a company named Next, another company named Pixar, and fell in love with an amazing woman who would become my wife. Pixar went on to create the world's first computer animated feature film, Toy Story, and is now the most successful animation studio in the world. In a remarkable turn of events, Apple bought Next, and I returned to Apple, and the technology we developed at Next is at the heart of Apple's current renaissance. And Laureen and I have a wonderful family together. I'm pretty sure none of this would have happened if I hadn't been fired from Apple. It was awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Sometimes life's going to hit you in the head with a brick. Don't lose faith. I'm convinced that the only thing that kept me going was that I loved what I did. You've got to find what you love, and that is as true for work as it is for your lovers. Your work is going to fill a large part of your life, and the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking and don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And like any great relationship, It just gets better and better as the years roll on. So keep looking. Don't settle. My third story is about death. When I was 17, I read a quote that went something like, "If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right." It made an impression on me, and since then, for the past 33 years, I've looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart. About a year ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had a scan at 7:30 in the morning, and it clearly showed a tumor on my pancreas. I didn't even know what a pancreas was. The doctors told me this was almost certainly a type of cancer that is incurable, and that I should expect to live no longer than 3 to 6 months. My doctor advised me to go home and get my affairs in order, which is doctor's code for prepare to die. It means to try and tell your kids everything you thought you'd have the next 10 years to tell them in just a few months. It means to make sure everything is buttoned up so that it will be as easy as possible for your family. It means to say your goodbyes. I live with that diagnosis all day. Later that evening, I had a biopsy where they stuck an endoscope down my throat, through my stomach and into my intestines, put a needle into my pancreas and got a few cells from the tumor. I was sedated, but my wife, who was there, told me that when they viewed the cells under a microscope, the doctor started crying because it turned out to be a very rare form of pancreatic cancer that is curable with surgery. I had the surgery, and thankfully, I'm fine now. This was the closest I've been to facing death, and I hope it's the closest I get for a few more decades. Having lived through it, I can now say this to you with a bit more certainty than when death was a useful but purely intellectual concept. No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet, death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It's life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. Right now, the new is you. But someday, not too long from now, you will gradually become the old and be cleared away. Sorry to be so dramatic, but it's quite true. Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary. When I was young, there was an amazing publication called the Whole Earth Catalog, which was one of the Bibles of my generation. It was created by a fellow named Stuart Brand, not far from here in Menlo Park, and he brought it to life with his poetic touch. This was in the late 60s, before personal computers and desktop publishing, so it was all made with typewriters, scissors, and Polaroid cameras. It was sort of like Google in paperback form 35 years before Google came along. It was idealistic, overflowing with neat tools and great notions. Stuart and his team put out several issues of the Whole Earth Catalog, And then, when it had run its course, they put out a final issue. It was the mid-1970s, and I was your age. On the back cover of their final issue was a photograph of an early morning country road, the kind you might find yourself hitchhiking on if you were so adventurous. Beneath it were the words, "Stay hungry, stay foolish." It was their farewell message as they signed off. Stay hungry, stay foolish. And I have always wished that for myself. And now, as you graduate to begin anew, I wish that for you. Stay hungry, stay foolish. Thank you all very much.
The preceding program is copyrighted by Stanford University. Please visit us at stanford.edu.